Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shell Cottage Radio. I'm your host and secret keeper, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill, also known as Sir Ezra the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of this year, Triwizard Champion herself, my wonderful co-host, and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hallo und einen wunderschönen guten Tag. It's so good to have you back in our beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Kommt rein und macht's euch gemütlich. Welcome to episode 109, in which we discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This week, we'll talk about chapter 26, The Second Task. We will give you a quick life update with our homemade cottage ketchup, feed our brains with important trivia knowledge, and then dive head on into our chapter summary audio experience. And I don't know if you can see it if you're watching the video version, but I'm wearing some Swish merch right now because we are thinking, as of now, June 1st, we're thinking of Swish and Flick, our friends. They're going down to Florida, to Epic Universe, to experience, you know, the new part of the Harry Potter world, the Wizarding World, in the theme park. And yeah, we both said, wow, we wish we could go, but we have a packed summer. I know, we almost just packed up the car, packed up Luke, and went down there. But yeah, so shout out to them.
Yeah, shout out to them. That's probably a lot of fun. That is a great shirt, by the way. That's my favorite shirt that they've ever done.
The ding. I know. The ding shirt. It's awesome.
I think it's funny. Yeah, that was a thing that they did whenever, you know, yeah, a little swish and flick on the arm.
Yeah, what, whenever they do like special colors, numbers for sure.
And yeah, then, numbers, colors. Then they just started dinging it for everything that came on. That's a ding. This is a ding. That's a ding. Ding, 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 ding.
The whole episode.
I'm just joking. But yeah, shout out to them. That's going to be fun. I hope they're having a good time down there. And yeah, it's great. On our cottage catch-up here, just a little bit, by the way, last episode, you probably heard us say, hey, we're going to save that casting news we wanted to talk about for next episode. And we thought we would be recording within a couple hours of that last recording. And that is not what happened. So that is going to be the way of it around here. I actually like to embrace a little theme for my other project called an unexpected podcast. And that might be the way things go. Things are a little unexpected around Shell Cottage right now, which is also to be expected when having a newborn. So this is how it's going to be.
This is the way.
This is the daggone way. Okay. But yeah, let's get into this casting news. I mean, actually, the first thing, I just have the most recent stuff. So we had the professors were all cast. Not all of them, but we had casting news for Snape, McGonagall, and for Albus Dumbledore. And I think we even had Filch and everything. So pretty cool stuff there last time. And we're not going to go into all the different things about it. I think one of the most controversial things was the Papa Essiadu is been cast as Snape. And there's been some controversy around it just because of change in ethnicity and things like that. And so,
we'll see. Snape is one of the characters that is very well described. And it's just, the least, I mean, fitting character in that. Yeah. Like you said.
Yeah. I think of the people that we thought that, like there was going to be sort of a race swap or whatever, that was not the one. That was not the one anyone was expecting. And so I think that's.
Oh, yeah.
There's plenty of
opportunity to, put just diversity in. But that was just, like you said, very unexpected.
Very unexpected. Mm-hmm. Very unexpected. So it definitely caught everybody unawares. Now, I do think, I think I'm going to give you a quick example of this. We had a situation, this was in House of the Dragon, House Velaryon. If anybody who's familiar with that fandom, was very controversial because they're characterized as being very pale of skin color, very white, with almost like silver hair, very Targaryen-like in their features. And so, again, they decided to do the same thing in that fandom, and it turns out that it was wonderful. It ended up being great, and there was no problems whatsoever with it. So I think we're just going to have to hold our horses, and we'll see how it goes.
I hope that's going to be the case. It's just, I think nobody expected that. And I'm sure, like, I've never seen the actor in a movie or show, but I'm sure he's a wonderful, incredibly talented actor. And I'm just curious to see how he's going to pull that off, because again, that's a completely different Snape from what we all have in mind. Right.
I'm definitely excited about it. And here's the thing, because as you go into a project, I'm rooting for it. I think that's the thing. And I talked to Tiffany from Swish and Flick about this, and she said something that was interesting and it kind of resonated with me, which is that like, we're optimistic for the show. We are rooting for the show. So it's a wait and see, you know? You could sort of front load with a lot of criticism if you want to around some of those casting decisions. I'd rather not. I'd rather just sort of go into it and see, okay, I'm literally waiting to see what unfolds. I did the same thing for Rings of Power. I was highly disappointed for that show. And then I ended up actually finding some good out of that and getting into a lot more of the lore and different things, and you make the best of it. And I'm so excited to kind of see what they do. So again, I really want this to be something that's going to be awesome and jam-packed with really extra nuggets from J.K. Rowling's mind. You know, there's these fuller scenes that she wants to kind of imagine. So,
right. And we're going to even talk about that in this chapter.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, different things we can do, and especially the second task here.
Yeah. So we do want to talk about the casting for the kids for our Golden Trio, right? So we have those were announced just a couple of days ago. And I had to get these names right because I already butchered the first one, which was Harry Potter actor. Dominic McLaughlin is going to play Harry Potter. So
right, tell everybody what you said instead.
I said McLaggen. I don't know why. I just like popped out. I saw it and I was thinking Harry Potter stuff, and it was hilarious. Dominic McLaughlin will play Harry Potter. Arabella Stanton will play Hermione Granger.
Yes.
And then Alistair Stout will play Ronald Weasley. So
I love that his name's Alistair.
Yeah.
And they look so fantastic. Cool. Yeah. I'm so excited.
They do. There's Arabella actually has a there's a reel of her kind of doing some sort of audition or some sort of acting scene. And I forget what it is exactly, but she's super sweet. She's very clever, very clipped in her responses and just cheeky, they might say. Yeah. I don't know. And it feels like people are really going to like her as Hermione. So
that's how you need to be. I mean, even Emma Watson was like Hermione in the end. I mean, not that she was like, you know, I don't want to say she was Hermione, but they were looking for kids who have that personality type that the characters in the book have. And I think they picked a wonderful trio the first time, and I have high hopes that they did the same for the show again.
Yeah, for sure. So it was really cool. I mean, there's not much other than that, just some casting announcements, and it kind of tells you that they're moving forward with this group of individuals, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. So it sounds like they've got their scripts and everything ready to go. They're just they're flying at this full force. So
I hope so. I'm so excited for it to come out next year.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And
I can't believe it. I can't believe that we're going to go back into, you know, Sorcerer's Stone and like all of that. And I'm so excited to see which scenes they decide to expand on and where they make changes maybe that we don't expect, or see maybe different point of views. I think that's something they could do easily in the show, is show us different point of views, not just the trio or Harry's, but give the viewer a couple more insight. I mean, we did here and there. Like, we saw the one scene with like Snape and Quirrell. I think Harry was even witnessing that. So yeah, it would be interesting to see a little bit of a different perspective here and there.
Yeah, for sure. Doing the TV show format definitely lends itself well to that. So
yeah,
we'll see what they decide. Okay, we're going to jump into some trivia right here, because Luke is bouncing around and he wants us to get into the trivia. So he's already...
He's so excited for it. He's going to whisper the answers in my ear.
Oh, really? You're going to do that, Mommy? Yeah. Oh my gosh, you helping her out. Okay, so I'm going to draw a card for Lottie, and I'm going to roll the dice. And she gets orange. So you ready for this? Here we go. You're on. What did this... Oh, my... Oh, never mind. I thought it said the second task. I was like, wow, that's the chapter we're on.
Random.
What did the second of the three brothers in the Tales of the Three Brothers ask for as his gift from death?
He asked for, let's see. The second brother asked for the resurrection stone. Sorry. Right? The Correct. First one yeah, asked for just, the elder one. Second
I'm just surprised
one,
it took you that long.
I'm yeah. sorry. I just had a brain fart. Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Basically, the power to recall loved ones from the grave. So death gave him the resurrection stone. You still have a card up there? We forgot to even put one up there for you, right?
So... No. You gave me a stash of cards last time, so I have one. I'm prepared, okay?
Oh, wow. Okay, I have an additional question. Do you have an additional question? Probably not.
Yeah, you can choose a question from the same card.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Mine is yellow. What do you got?
Yours is yellow. What is the only part... Okay. What is the only part of Peter Pettigrew's body that was found after he was allegedly murdered? Which part exactly?
His pinky?
Yeah, no, it's not that exact. Just say the
finger?
More general, yeah, a finger.
Okay.
I actually don't know. Were we given an exact? Yeah, we were, I think. Were we? The exact finger?
I think it was his little pinky finger.
Yeah, I think so too. At least in the movies it was.
Yeah,
but yeah, a finger. So you got a point. Maybe you can put in the points for us, and then do a second round.
So for
hopefully
you,
with some more intricate questions.
You have magenta, and this is gonna be pretty chill. Which one of these is not an unforgivable curse? Which one of the following is not unforgivable? It's gonna be so easy. Imperio, Crucio, and Sectum Sempra.
I mean, I think it's pretty unforgivable to use Sectum Sempra, but it's not an official. It should be though. Should it be or no?
It probably should be. Yeah, but 29 points. You're up 2 points there. Very good. Very good.
Boom, boom.
We'll do one more for me, and then I've got a bonus question for you.
Okay. Sounds good. I like that.
For me, it's also yellow. So what's my yellow question?
Oh, wait, we just had that, so I need a new... Or roll the dice again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Green, then. I'll take green.
Oh, yeah, we definitely have to, like... Some of these questions are just yawn.
They're yawn. That's why I have a bonus one for you, because they're so yawn. I'm so tired of them. I think it's...
Okay, what creatures...
I think after this book, we're, like, done with these.
Yeah, we should be. It was worth a try, okay?
It's beneath our listeners.
I know, right? And some of our listeners are like, no, just kidding. What creatures does Dumbledore send Hagrid to recruit?
What creatures does Dumbledore send Hagrid? Oh, yeah. Giants.
Giants. Squid. Just kidding.
Giant squids. Giant squids. Because we'll talk about the giant squid today. But yeah, I was
giant
actually, you know, when you,
word.
You know when you say something's going to be really chill and then all of a sudden you're sort of like, whoa, wait a second.
I know. That's what I'm always afraid of. That's what I'm always afraid of.
We will like talk these questions down. Unless we've just really gotten the easiest of the easy. It's such a joke.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, anyways. So we'll see. We'll get back to them. Maybe
there
we're just
is,
that
for
good.
Example, an interesting... What's...
So here's the extra question I have, just to kind of...
Okay, yeah.
I know,
give
I just found one that
question.
Was... I found one too. On my card, too, that was like Manungus Fletcher related. I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I guess we're just not rolling enough. We should stick to one card, maybe, and go through all the colors and quit rolling the dice and just...
Yeah, we should pick the hardest question on the card. Let's do that.
Yeah,
I like that. Okay.
Much better.
Or we can one medium, one hard.
And then that's all subjective, but I like it. It's better than the softball questions we're getting here. How does Harry catch his first snitch? You know, just pretty good. Okay. Anyway, so here's a question for you. And this is fun because I like these ones better because I think people are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You have to read the chapter. This is they're about the chapter. So what is the name? sorry. Okay, we're being silly. What is the name of the... Let me start that again. What is the name of the book that Harry Potter fell asleep on right before the second task?
Oh, we just talked about it. There's a wand, there's a way.
Where there's a wand, there's a way, baby. That is...
I only know that because you pointed it out, though. I would not... I mean, props to you. You pointed it out while we were listening to the chapter. Yeah.
That's why it's bonus. That's why it's bonus. I'm just... That's not extra, not for points, because I actually did give that to you in the car. But I thought it was kind of fun. There were so many books that were referenced, actually, in this chapter that they went through. And I was just sort of dumbfounded. I'm like, wow, how many we got there? And then finally... Where there's a wand, there's a way really stood out to me. And that's actually a book I'd like to read. If I were in the Wizarding World, wherever there's a wand, there's a way. Like,
yeah, I know, right?
It's sort of this, like, it must be full of stuff that can help you utilize your wand to the fullest to kind of get to what you need to get done. So,
right, right. I would be totally intrigued to read that.
Yeah, same. Okay, well, friends, that was our trivia. We got a big book discussion today. We're going to dive into the chapter summary. We'll see you on the other side and jump into our discussion. Chapter 26, The Second Task. Harry is still shaken from last night's events. In charms class, he tells Ron and Hermione everything that happened yesterday. About the prefect's bathroom, that he solved the eggs riddle, Barty Crouch appearing on the Marauder's map, and about Moody rescuing him from Filch and Snape. Ron jumps to the conclusion that Moody must suspect Snape to be the one who put Harry's name in the Goblet of Fire. Hermione rolls her eyes and reminds him that they have suspected Snape of hurting Harry before when he was actually saving his life. But then they wonder about Mr. Crouch's appearance on the map. If he was at Hogwarts last night, does that mean that he was faking his illness this whole time? As much as Harry would like to play detective again and try to figure out the mystery around Crouch, Moody, and Snape, he brings Ron and Hermione's attention to a more urgent matter. How is he going to swim and breathe underneath water for a whole hour on the day of the second task? The three discuss it for a while and rule out the summoning charm this time, as well as far too complex human transfiguration magic. Hermione suggests that Harry's best hope would be some kind of charm that would help him at least breathe underwater. So once more, Harry buries himself in library books trying to find such a charm or anything really that would solve his problem. The days until the second task begin to fly by, and Harry experiences the same kind of panic that he felt before the first task. The three struggle to find even the slightest clue on what sort of spell Harry could use in the lake. Not too long ago, Harry had sent an owl to Sirius to let him know what happened to Crouch, Snape, and Moody, but when he finally gets Sirius's response on the Monday before the task, it only contains a short request. He wants Harry to send him the date of the next Hogsmeade weekend. Harry realizes that he completely forgot to mention the egg's clue to his godfather. Still, he quickly scribbles the Hogsmeade date on a piece of parchment and he returns the answer to the owl. At least Hagrid is back teaching care of magical creatures and he continues Professor Grubbly Plank's lessons about unicorns. Everyone is delighted when he introduces the class to the golden unicorn foals that he managed to capture. Hagrid also gets to speak with Harry alone during class and lets him know that he is 100% confident in Harry's abilities and he knows he's going to do well in the second task. Harry feels awful and can't bring himself to tell Hagrid that he's got no idea how he's going to survive the lake. The evening before the second task, Harry can't think straight anymore and he feels like he's trapped in a nightmare. The sun is already setting and he, Ron, and Hermione are still desperately roaming through piles of books in the library when things start to get a bit mysterious. Fred and George arrive with a message from Professor McGonagall. She wants Ron and Hermione in her office ASAP. And even though the two promise to meet Harry back in the common room to look through more books later, neither of them returns to Gryffindor Tower that night. Harry's on his own. Only Crookshanks keeps him company. When Harry still hasn't found anything by midnight, he's so desperate that he decides to put on his invisibility cloak and go back to the library. There, he forces himself to go through book after book after book, but by 2 a.m. in the morning, exhaustion overcomes him and he falls asleep at one of the library desks. Just when it seems like every hope is lost and that Harry would have to tell the judges that he can't do the task, salvation comes in the form of an unexpected hero. Dobby wakes Harry up just 10 minutes before the task begins. And he excitedly hands him the solution, gillyweed. This magical plant will allow Harry to grow gills and breathe underwater. How did Dobby even know about this plant? And how was he able to get it? But there's no time to think. Harry has to go now. In a full sprint, he dashes down to the lake and arrives just in time for the start signal. He catches a glimpse of the stands on the other side of the lake where the crowd excitedly awaits the beginning of the task. Harry arrives panting and clutching his heart, but without further ado, the four champions are positioned at the shore of the lake. When Bagman blows the whistle, Harry quickly swallows the gillyweed and wades through the shallow waters as fast as he can. First, nothing happens. but then his lungs suddenly stop working, and Harry flings himself into the water. He has grown gills, and his brain fills back up with oxygen as soon as he uses them underwater. Harry also notices that his hands and feet have become webbed, and his eyes are perfectly adjusted to see in the water. With a new burst of energy, he dives down deeper and deeper into the wild, gloomy underwater landscape of the lake. Suddenly, he's attacked by a couple of Grindylows that were lurking in the dark. Harry has to use his wand and fires multiple Relatio Jinxes at them to free himself from their tight grip. For a while, everything is quiet again, but then another unexpected creature makes Harry jump. It's Moaning Myrtle. Turns out she actually knows where the merpeople live, and she points him in the right direction. Harry gives her a thumbs up to express his gratitude, and after a good 20 minutes of swimming in that direction, he enters what looks like an underwater village. Harry keeps moving past the merpeople's houses and backyards until he reaches the village square. There, tied to a large stone statue in the center, he spots the four hostages. Ron, Hermione, Cho Chang, and Fleur Delacour's little sister, all four of them are unconscious. Harry cuts Ron's rope with a sharp stone. Still, none of the other champions has shown up yet. This makes Harry nervous, and he's worried about the other hostages. He tries to free Hermione too, but the merpeople immediately seize him. They warn him that he is only allowed to take his own hostage. Thankfully, Cedric shows up to retrieve Cho. He lets Harry know Fleur and Crumb are on their way. Shortly after, Crumb appears looking half-human, half-shark. With Harry's help, he's able to free Hermione and quickly swims off with her. Harry should go too, but he can't bring himself to leave the little girl behind with no sign of Fleur. He makes a bold decision. He goes against the merpeople's warning and frees the silver-haired girl. Harry has no choice but to use his wand to threaten the merpeople, who are trying to get in between him and the girl. They back away, too scared of his magic to challenge Harry. Then he cuts the rope, grabs both Ron and Gabriella, and slowly makes his ascent to the surface. It is a difficult and painful journey back up. Harry has to use all of his willpower to keep his tired muscles moving. Right before he reaches the surface, the Gillyweed's magic wears off. His hands and feet turn back to normal, and his gills are gone. The lack of oxygen almost makes Harry pass out, but just in time he's able to break his head through the water's surface and take a big, deep breath through his lungs. To his relief, Ron and Gabriella gain consciousness again once their heads are above water. The crowd is shouting and screaming at the sight of them. The three swim towards the stands, and Ron scolds Harry that he shouldn't have wasted any time on the other hostages and that they would have never let anyone die down there. Harry, now that he thinks about it, feels stupid. Nevertheless, when they reach the shore, Fleur is beyond relieved and grateful, dropping her usual confident demeanor. Madame Pomfrey immediately treats them all with blankets and pepper-up potion. Dumbledore has a quick word with the chief merperson, then the judges go into a huddle to discuss the marks. Meanwhile, Fleur rushes over to thank Harry and Ron, and she rewards both of them with kisses on each cheek. The boys both turn very red in the face while Hermione looks furious. Then the judges finally announce the scores. Fleur had used a bubblehead charm but was attacked by Grindylows, so she gets 25 points. Cedric, who also used a bubblehead charm and returned first, but not within the time limit, earns 47 points. Victor had shown only an incomplete shark transformation, returned second, and therefore gets awarded 40 points. And Harry, even though he was the first to reach the hostages, he was the last to return. But because he showed what Ludo Bagman called moral fiber by trying to save everyone, he earns 45 points. This ties him for first place with Cedric. The crowd cheers and applauds at this decision. Bagman further announces that the final task is set for June 24th, and that the champions will be informed of what it will entail exactly 1 month before. As Harry reflects on the day, he makes a promise to himself. Next time he's in Hogsmeade, he's going to buy Dobby a pair of socks for every day of the year.
Did he ever do that? Was my first question. Did he ever buy Dobby all these socks? I don't think he did.
I don't think he did. I don't think he did. I think he's bad, Harry. Bad, you bad boy. Yeah, I definitely don't think that happened. He definitely deserves it. Dobby.
I know. I gotta say.
No, or does he? Time out.
Well, time I know. Out. I know. I know. He was set up to listen in on Crudy and McGonagall talking about it and stuff, but
Yeah, was that it? Was that the only thing that he listened in? And then was there more or not? Was there extra interference? I don't know. I mean,
I think definitely Crudy had to make sure. It's funny because he actually did plan in the book on Neville to give Harry the information about the gillyweed, because he gave him the book in the book. He gave him the herbology book. But then Harry never asked Neville. He was too proud. He didn't want to ask anyone besides Hermione and Ron. He also didn't want word to get out that he's asking for help. He even felt bad, you know, having Ron and Hermione search the books in the library with him. So Neville never got to tell Harry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to come up with a backup plan. I think in the movie, they just didn't want to, it cost too much to animate Dobby. So they were like, let's just go with Neville in the first place. It's just way easier because it's not crucial that it was Dobby who told him that about Gillyweed.
Right.
So yeah, that's why they went with Neville. I gotta say though, Harry, when they form Dumbledore's army, he's like, guys, I didn't do anything. I just got help from everyone along the way. And I gotta say, part of it is true, right? I mean, he had a lot of help, during the tournament, especially. But there was a moaning Myrtle to help him figure out the egg in the first place, and then to help him in the lake to be the first at the Merpeople's village. Because I don't think he would ever have found the village that fast without moaning Myrtle pointing him in the right direction. Harry, I would go this way. Because it still took him 20 minutes to get there, even though she pointed him the right direction. And
remember
how big the lochs, the lakes in Scotland were?
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine you have to search, as a tiny human being, have to search that whole lake for a village deep in the lake, like down there.
Sure. I mean, they're big enough to house a giant squid, right?
So exactly.
or Nessie, same thing, giant squid, Nessie, same thing. Here's a question, or it's not even a question, it's just a statement, I guess. Cedric is able to get the same score as Harry over these two tasks, even though Harry has two people, and one of whom is a judge, trying to help him. He has these different people trying to help him. It's insane. And so Cedric, he's our guy. And he is literally just like, I think he's such a stud. I think he's so cool.
Yeah.
I think he's super powerful and he's humble. He's a Hufflepuff. He's a hard worker. I'm just so proud of him that he accomplishes all these different things. And, you know, I mean, yeah, again, right. I think tipping people off as to what the task is one thing. So like when they're figuring out how to get the clue, right? How do you get the clue from your egg? That's really all Cedric was doing there, was like, hey, put it in water. All right, cool.
Right.
Everyone else probably got that hint. Harry helps him with the clue in terms of like, there's dragons. Still, Cedric has to go figure out what to do with his dragon.
Yeah.
Harry has to figure out what to do with his dragon. And Cedric got no help in terms, and I'm telling you, he got no help. Dumbledore.
Oh, I know.
Unless they're gonna show us in the TV show, the HBO show, like Professor Sprouts.
Then he would have used Gillyweed, right? That would have made sense.
Sure, it probably would have if Sprout was involved, for sure. Or unless she's really like, clever.
Right, she's like, oh, it's too obvious if he uses Gillyweed.
Right. Could you imagine if that was a thing that actually, I mean, I don't want that to be the case, but it's kind of funny to think about in a what-if, you know, situation.
I know.
Because I like that he doesn't. I like that he has no help, and I even like how the Puffs play sort of portrayed it when they figured it out. Like, he's in there working out with some of his classmates, but to have
And I would love to see more of that in the show. Like I said, like, give us some scenarios in the other common rooms, or like, you know, just imagine the Hufflepuffs when they get ready to choose their electives, they go see Professor Sprout and like talk to her, and they go see her over in the greenhouses, have a cup of tea, and you know, like that must be really cool. I don't know, just little things like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. And when you think about that, I mean, I think they're for the HBO show. I wish they were going to do some of that stuff, but I doubt it. It's probably going to be just going to follow the Golden Trio.
I know there's a lot of it's jam packed.
Because you could go, you could go nuts with that. Everyone wants to go down and sit in the Slytherin common room and just chill out with Draco and see how that's going to go. Which, by the way, can't wait to figure out who they're going to cast for Draco Malfoy.
I know.
Everyone else, yeah. So
that's fun.
Okay, but you know, I think let's move into the chapter just a little bit. Some major maybe takeaways, points of interest, if you will.
Yeah.
And I know you have your notes there, right? Do you want me to kind of go through them, or do you want to elaborate on them?
Let's go elaborate on our notes.
Okay. So the weeks leading up to the second task, Harry is absolutely crazy again. He spends all of his time in the library, and the night before, once more, he has no clue.
I know. Well, insane. Yeah. No, he has no clue what to do the night before. I mean,
it's not for lack of trying, though. He did try.
I know he did try. And it must be, like you said, you think it's only one book away. Okay, the next book. He talks about it. Or at least we get insight into his mind. That's how he keeps himself motivated. Keep going. Just keep thinking it's going to be in the next book. And you made an interesting point, which is.
Sure. Yeah, so I thought, and that's what our trivia question was earlier, the book that he falls asleep on, right? It says, where there's a wand, there's a way. I kind of thought, that was it, right there. He was literally right there, and it actually has the bubblehead charm in it, and he was just one book, maybe one chapter away. Yeah. He falls asleep. He drools on the page. He probably drooled right over where it said bubblehead charm. And just eyes just drifting asleep right before he gets to it. And it's like, ah, dude, you were right there. Yeah. So it's kind of crazy because they went through a ton of books and the chapter goes on to list a bunch of them. And I thought they definitely did their work. And to me, it was crazy. How do all these books not have that charm?
Nothing, right.
I know it's not a super common thing, but you know, the need to maybe go underwater and breathe underwater. Right. So I guess maybe that's probably why. Why would you need to? It's very rare that you would need to do that. But still, shocking that we couldn't find it.
I think it was also funny that I think Ron or someone had the idea to just use Accio again and just kind of get scuba diving equipment, right? Somebody said, well, that's going to be in the next, you know, where's the next Muggle town, village? And then is there going to be scuba diving equipment? And what are they going to say if all of a sudden, like, scuba diving equipment is flying through the air all the way, you know, to somewhere in the middle of nowhere? Like, that's so hilarious to think about that. Okay.
Yeah, it is, actually.
It would have been clutch, though, if Harry would have pulled that off.
It's funny to imagine him walking out from the shore and just, like, putting that on.
I know.
He comes out in it, right? Like, he comes out of Hogwarts.
I was going to say, it would have taken him an hour, probably the full hour of the task, to put on the scuba diving equipment. Because I have been, I actually do have, fun fact, I have a scuba diving license, a PADI license. I did my, I did that back in the day when I was in high school. So,
do you still have it? Could you still use it?
I still have it. I think it's a lifetime, I mean, you know, it's on your own risk. You have to know some stuff to go down there and actually, like, with water pressure and all of that. You can't like, dive down real fast and come up real fast. Like, you have to take your time, and there's certain you have to do some math to see how fast you can go for your body to adjust and all of that stuff. So it's on your own risk. I mean, you have the license for a lifetime, but you need to know some, you know, you don't want to risk, like, not knowing what you're doing. And you always have to go with a partner. Like, that's, I think, for everyone.
Count me out. Count me out. Unless I have literal magic that I think is going to help me, I'm good.
Yeah, it is fun, but it's very intimidating. It can be intimidating, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think we're meant to be there. That is not our realm. I'm not equipped. I mean, literally, Harry puts gillyweed in, right? Once he gets it and he swallows it, he's chewing on it, and he gets gills. He starts drinking and sucking in water.
That is
he has
so cool, actually.
Webbing on his hands. I mean, that was
I would love that.
Maybe then I would consider it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not relying on some tank or some time limit or whatever, and I can deal with the pressure. Right. Like, that would be different, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, I think I had to write this down. So at one point during their studies, they wished that they could just be an animagus. Mm-hmm. By the way, people are probably so irritated. I used to say, I still am going to say it, animagus. I just heard on the audiobook today for the first time them say animagus.
Yeah.
So I guess it's and not a.
Hey.
My bad.
Germany, we say animagos, so...
Animagos, okay. Yeah. So, I mean,
pretty close.
I don't know.
The American way to say animagus. I feel like a lot of people are used to saying and hearing that. So, but if you want to be correct about it, at least in the audiobook, they say animagus.
Animagus. Yeah. So, anyway, so they're talking about, like, what does it take to become an animagus, and could they do that? Could Harry actually turn into a fish? And they have this discussion about whether or not they can choose their form. And I don't think they can, right? They can't choose their form. It comes down to more about, like, some maybe inner nature, maybe your personality, who you are. You can't just choose a toad or a fish or
I don't think so. I was always of the impression that basically the animal chooses you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And there's an interesting connection to Snape here. So some people theorize that Snape.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people theorize that Snape is in animagus and that he is a bat. And it's because of the moment where he and McGonagall duel and there's like this bat-like imagery that Harry sees flying off into the distance and flying away, and it looked like to Harry a bat. And so some people have speculated that, well, maybe he did have animagus form, and people are like, well, no, he couldn't, because if he were an animagus, he would be a doe, because your Patronus has to match your animagus. And there's a whole video, a short that I have out there talking about this, and they were like, wrong. I love how how forward people are on the internet and just
wrong.
Brash, and have you ever read the books, blah, blah, blah. And they're going on about how, like, no, don't you know, like, your Patronus equals your, what would be your animagus form. They're the same. So if your Patronus is an owl or a dog, your animagus form would be the same thing. And they get that from, I think, Harry's dad, right? So the stag Patronus, and then he was also Prongs. So, except the only problem is that love actually alters sometimes your Patronus, right?
Wait, and do we know if James's Patronus also was a stag?
Do we
know that?
Oh,
because the question is, if you're your animagus is an animal, is your Patronus the same animal?
Oh, hold on a darn second.
Because we were talking about Harry's Patronus, but the actual animagus was James. So was his? We don't know, right?
But that's so funny. The internet lists it as a stag, but hold on a darn second.
Is it mentioned?
How do we know that? How do we know that? Is that ever actually... hold on. Because you're right. I mean, like, we know that... Oh, man. Because Snape's is a doe.
Right.
Because Lily's was a doe. But that, Matt, is that because James's was... His Patronus is a doe? Or is it because his animagus form was...
Yeah, that's the question, right? Like, I don't know. And I just think, like you said, it can be the same, but it's not necessarily the same.
So, I mean, the only reason we're stopping here, everyone's like, guys, come on, it's pretty obvious. But, so Pottermore does say that it's a stag, I believe.
Okay.
His Patronus is. So, yeah. Lily's husband.
I don't remember reading it in the books, but maybe it is an article somewhere.
I don't think it's actually in the books. Because how would you ever have seen James's Patronus charm?
Right. We only see Harry's Patronus.
We only see his, and it's based upon... Right, okay. So you have Lily's husband's Patronus was a stag, the male form of her doe. The stag and doe complement each other rather than matched. So interestingly, James's animagus form was also a stag, hence his school nickname was Prongs.
Okay.
But they don't say exactly. This whole article is basically... Love and Patronus is how does love impact your Patronus? And it was written in 2020. This is on Pottermore, or now harrypotter.com. And it talks about the idea that if you fall in love, we know that Tonks's Patronus shifts, right? So it's sort of shifting because she's falling in love with Remus and she's having a hard time there. So needless to say, if you were an animagus before you became in love with someone, right? And you go through the whole process and you turn into a cat, but then you fall in love with someone who's animagus or Patronus is a squirrel. I mean, you might your Patronus might
richtig. Yeah.
So like that could be your Patronus, even though your animagus form is a cat, you could also cast a squirrel Patronus because you're in love with someone whose animagus form is a squirrel.
I agree.
You know, I don't know. I think it's about, so everyone was sort of getting on me because they were like, no, clearly there, it was like, it was a fact. They were taking it as absolute fact that your Patronus has to always match your animagus form. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. Tonks's original Patronus was a jackrabbit, an animal similar in size to Luna Lovegood's silver hair.
Yeah.
But the Patronus Harry saw as they made their way up to Hogwarts, was this four-legged creature, and it resembled a wolf, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like Remus because she was struggling at that time.
Can you imagine, though? I mean, like, with the whole discussion of animagus equals your Patronus, can you imagine Rita Skeeter fighting off a bunch of Dementors with a little beetle Patronus?
I know, with a beetle? Yeah, like, are you joking? So is that what you're saying? Is that like that's what I want to write to people? So like Rita Skeeter's Patronus was a beetle. Is what you're telling me?
All right.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But anyway, yeah.
Like the Dementors can't even see it. They're just like, okay, I don't feel.
It's annoying to them. They're just like, yeah. Okay. Another point that I had here is a big question: is will HBO fix the second task viewing problem, viewing situation we have?
Second and third, by the way.
Second and third. Yeah. What are they going to do? Like, is there a monitor system that they can put in? Like a magical monitor?
You know, remember how we see, I mean, there's
Revelio, maybe? Like,
right. Remember how we see, though, the Quidditch World Cup? I mean, we don't get to see the match itself. But there's like a display kind of with Crumb like going around the stadium, and I think something like a magical display like that would be cool actually, why did they never, when they were editing the book, why did they never come across that problem? I guess it was too much editing involved to fix that problem. I don't know, but literally all the students, staff, they're so excited for this task. For both of the second and the third, but there's nothing happening for them. Actually, they just rely on stories that they tell, and that's it.
Yeah, I think they will probably fix it. Cool. It's something they'll do something where they'll cast something over the lock, and you can kind of see in the lake what's going on,
That'd be sick. See
a beacon where they're supposed to get to, and they're not getting close to it. There's got to be something, because that's been a glaring sort of problem.
Yeah, and then Dumbledore doesn't have to talk to the Merpeople's chief about like what Harry did. They just all see it, and so it's clear to the judges. Like they can all see, okay, Harry was there first, and he decided to stay.
And actually, clearly in J.K. Rowling's mind, that's exactly what she anticipated. So like they all dive in and they're all cheering, and there's this big wait. It's just like long. No one knows what really happens. You can't even see the task unfold if you're a judge. Like the judges can't even see it.
Right.
They don't really know what you do down there. Right. You're kind of on your own. Figure it out. They have to rely upon whoever gets back first gets the most points. I feel like that's kind of crazy. I mean.
Yeah.
How do they even know that they used certain charms and what they did? I mean, they do because as they're walking in, they probably cast the charms and they can maybe see them or something. But who's down there? I'd love to see Dumbledore down there just waiting water and like with some goggles or something, like watching the whole thing.
Like, how do they make sure that none of them actually get hurt? Because we saw Harry struggled. He almost didn't make it because the gillyweed wore off. Mm-hmm. Like, how would they monitor if the student needs help or not? Like, in the maze, in the third task, at least they can send some sparks flying, red sparks, right? And then they know, okay, we got to go there. They need help. and they kind of give up. But in the lake, how do you do that? There has to be some sort of monitoring the both the hostages and the champions, right?
right. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. We'll see if they fix that though, or if they do anything to add to it in the HBO show coming up. That'd be cool. Yeah. On to one of our favorite characters of all time, Percy Weasley.
Wow. Right. Yeah, it's showing through, and I had an interesting thought. So we feel like, okay, Percy is already starting to become, you know, that nasty version of Percy for a while, because he gets really mad at Harry, even though Harry is like, Harry always felt like the Weasleys are his siblings, his brothers too, just because he's so close to Ron. But Percy kind of, I mean, he steps into that mini version of Crouch and wants to show his authority. And it's like, Potter, why are you late? Mm-hmm. But then later, when we read at the end of the task, when we read about him being really worried about Ron, actually, he shows that even though Ron is like, don't worry, like they would have never let anything happen to us down there. But we see Fleur super worried about her sister, and then Percy, he actually is, I think, pale in the face and like helps Ron out, and Ron's like, get off, like what do you want? But I think maybe in this moment, maybe he was a little worried about like Ron and was a part of the why he was so mad at Harry for being late, because he was afraid that Harry might not have shown up to get Ron out of the lake.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he just doesn't know. I'm sure some of them were sitting there thinking like, Ron has this idea that like, yeah, it's just a song, it's not going to be literal, Harry, we're all going to be fine. But again, Percy might be thinking people die in this task, and so
that
has happened in the past, so it's possible now, and just overall anxiety and worry. I mean, it's also if Harry is a target of some kind and you're looking for a great opportunity to kill Harry Potter, well, when no one's watching down in the lake,
right,
and you hire
is with him,
you hire some merpeople to assassinate him. I mean, I'm just saying, if Percy's mind wants to go wild, there's ways for it to go wild and think like, God.
Yeah, no, that was actually perfect to lead into our next point about the merpeople. Because they are actually described as pretty dangerous. And it happens to be like the colony that lives in the lake by like next to Hogwarts, they happen to be friendly. But normally they do, I mean, on the wiki it says there is merpeople that drag down people and kill them. So, and they all have spears, but I think they're just friends with Dumbledore and they would never do anything like that. All they were supposed to do is just keep those people hostage down there, make sure everybody just gets one. But they never I wrote down somewhere in here, I don't think they would ever attack any of the champions.
Well, just while you're looking at that, I mean, think about Aragog and think about, you know, Hagrid and how he's like, you know, they definitely won't, you know, hurt you, right? And Aragog's sort of like, yeah, like I won't hurt you because I'm friends with Hagrid. That doesn't mean that my children aren't going to like.
Oh, you think they might? Yeah, they would have maybe.
Well, that I'm just sort of saying, like, there's a parallel between Dumbledore and Hagrid a little bit, like just in terms of them trusting, you know, these dangerous groups of people and saying, like, the only reason that we have these sort of law-abiding merpeople or like merpeople who are friendly is because of Dumbledore. So Dumbledore is not there. They're not going to be friendly. It's not going to work out. Hagrid's not. It's just like you see those zookeepers who sleep with the cheetah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Maybe you can go in there and sleep with the cheetah if the zookeeper's there.
Right.
But take the zookeeper out of there that sleeps with the cheetah, and is best friends with the cheetah. You're probably not going to make it.
Right.
So. Yeah, anyway, good point.
Do you think Dumbledore went down with a bubblehead charm himself and like, you know, like visited their village? I just think it's so cool that we get this whole village that they have and like a square and they have their houses and backyards and some Grindelows. No, wait.
Yeah, yeah, Grindelows.
Yeah, as like their dogs, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Yeah, he probably could have to set the task up. I mean,
he needs to know. Yeah, what it looks like right down there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So
somebody must have gone down to kind of set it up and
set the task up.
Right. But it is interesting that the merpeople are actually the same creatures as sirens. They're the oldest recorded merpeople in the world, are the Greek sirens. Sirens? Mm-hmm. Is that what, how you sirens. Say it in English? Sirens, yeah. You know, like, yeah, the, you know, beautiful, pretty women mm-hmm. who, like, sing a song, and then they drag down sailors in the water, right. and, you know, they never were seen again. There is, oh yeah, in Scotland, they're called Selkies and Merrows in Ireland. So I'm guessing they're actually mythological creatures of these countries.
But I love that they say they're less beautiful.
I know.
So I guess in Scotland and Ireland, they're not as beautiful as the ones down in Greece.
Sorry. Yeah.
Everybody wants to glorify Greece, all right? But I tell you right now, I like Scotland and Ireland. I think it's beautiful.
Me too.
Okay.
And this is actually taken from Newt Scamander's book, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Okay.
And so that's how we know that the group in, well, we're in Scotland, so those are Selkies, I would say, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So cool. I just think it's fun to learn about these different creatures, which, by the way, they chose to not be seen legally as beings, but as beasts, because they didn't want to be put into the same category as hags and vampires. So they were like, we're rather considered beasts than being the same kind of being as those guys.
Interesting. So, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, good for them. You know, I mean, it's your choice.
Right. Yeah. And since they're kind of secluded, they're in the water. They don't really care what happens above.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So do we want to talk about Harry's his hero complex that he kind of has
Absolutely.
Going on?
Absolutely. I mean, I actually want to know, what would you have done in his shoes? If you were down there and you rescue your best friend, but then you also see two of your other friends, one a potentially love interest, but like two people you also don't want to die down there or like be left behind. What would you do?
It is kind of crazy. So I think the major dilemma is, like, the other champions, they go down, and when they look at the four who are there, they only see one person that they're like, yeah, that's my person.
Exactly. I gotta
get that person out there. Harry happens to see two people. And so once he sees two people, he then sees three people and four people. You know what I'm saying? Right. He starts to be like, oh God, all of these people, I should save everyone. Oh my God.
Right.
And it does turn into this greater complex. I think, it would be hard if I saw, like, you know, multiple family members down there, right? Mm-hmm. That are close to me, like, you know, you, my sister, my dad, whatever. That would be kind of crazy. I would probably be like, I got to get all these people out of here, even though they might be important to somebody else.
Right.
I could see why he would want to do that, because they were close to him. Somewhere, somebody asked the question, let's say Victor Crumb took someone else to the Yule Ball and not Hermione. Would Hermione have been the person that was taken instead of Ron? Or was it always going to be Ron who was taken for the second task? Like, does Hermione...
You mean for Harry's hostage?
Yeah, for Harry's hostage. Yeah.
Good question. But I do think, because Ron and Harry were always closer, like he always says, like, Hermione's my friend for sure, but it's not the same as it is with Ron. So I would think... Now, had somebody else picked, like, let's say Fleur and Ron were a thing,
mm-hmm.
and they went to the Yule Ball, and, like, they picked Ron to be the thing that Fleur would dearly miss, then, and given that Crumb and Hermione weren't the thing, then I think Hermione would be picked for Harry, yeah, for sure. But...
Yeah, so if Ron is taken by somebody else and Hermione is open, that would have been she's number two. She's his number two option.
I think so.
Or a hostage. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I mean, again, it's kind of a hairy thing to be a little thick in terms of, like, the rules, and, like, Dumbledore's going to let people die and whatever. It's ridiculous. I mean, he definitely should be, like, Ron. I mean, it was obvious to Ron and even Hermione. Like, clearly, you know, we were all going to be fine and good.
Right.
I think he was thinking about possessions in terms of, like, his Nimbus 2000 or his Firebolt. He thought that's what was going to be taken down there, right? Not his...
Right.
Dearest
yeah, yeah, yeah. He even, that's what at least we see in his dream, kind of, the Firebolt was in his dream, right? He dreamed about, I think, the mermaid that is depicted in, that's the mm-hmm. the picture in the bathroom, in the prefect's bathroom.
Yeah.
Takes his Firebolt, and yeah, I mean, that's what you would think, right? Something you would dearly miss. Doesn't sound like a person.
Yeah, sure. Did you just delete the comment about Cedric having a knife?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of redundant. I don't think we have to talk about it.
I know, but I just thought it was cool. Like, I don't know why you deleted that.
That's no, like, I just thought, okay, we like, don't have to.
Of the notes, I was waiting to get to the Cedric knife thing. It's so important, and I can't believe you deleted it from the notes right in front of my face. I'm sitting here. She just literally swiped it, highlighted it, clicked delete right in front of me, live on the show. Let's go ahead and talk about it. Cedric and his knife.
He just pulls out a knife. What's up?
I mean, this guy's a knife wielding dude. He's got the nobody else. I mean, Crumb clearly went in there with his teeth, the shark teeth. Yeah. They had to hand him a daggone rock. Here, right. Here, you big dummy! Like, right. Take this shark, this sharp rock, and get Hermione out of there. Like, Harry had to do that for him. Otherwise, how long was he going to be down there gnawing on that rope, right? And he couldn't get her? That might have cost him time. Think about that. Like, he probably would have been down there a little bit longer.
But how's so, no one? Why is no one using a spell to cut the rope? I don't get it.
Well, I think in the movie that was all. Yeah, he does do that, and it makes a lot of sense or whatever.
It's just fun to think that Cedric thought about taking a knife with him. Like,
yeah, why? Yeah, like he kind of he thought about this ahead of time.
I know.
They're probably gonna tie something up down there. I mean, imagine the puffs in the common room. Like, what does Cedric need?
Right.
Okay, he's gonna have his swim trunks on, can't have much on him. Who has a belt? Let's get a belt and wrap a little knife around his leg here.
He actually also had like ninja shuriken, like the he was ready to
cheesy cow.
Doesn't crazy lake, but
anyways, he does have a knife in case you guys missed that part, and I thought it was kind of awesome that he comes down there and just whoosh, just
I know cuts it and, sorry I mean it was nothing
Joe probably Cedric. Thought it was hot. She was probably like, yeah, it's old boy's got a knife out, like he's ready to he's ready to knife fight somebody down there in case he needs to. I mean, it's just awesome. So, what was Fleur going to do? How was she going to get rid of, how was she going to, you know, that's thick rope. You know what I mean?
You're good. So. You're leading right into my next point, though. And I want to make this a big one because it's a theory since you mentioned it so often, right? Yeah. So, again, Fleur doesn't even make it to the hostages.
Yeah.
It is almost too obvious that every single task, she's failing so hard.
Right.
And despite her being picked by, I mean, yeah, I know some people say that was also Crudy's work, that she was picked by the Goblet of Fire.
The name of the book? I'm just kidding. newborn parents over here just making it work.
Right. But I don't think so because, again, they say the Goblet is a powerful item and he had to really put in some work to make Harry a champion. So I don't think he has anything to do with Fleur being chosen. And
unless,
I think it's too what?
Are you ready for this theory? Unless
I didn't even
he was
say
using
yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, no, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I said no, go ahead.
No.
I just you were trying to bring down the Crudy theory that maybe Fleur wasn't handpicked by him.
Okay. Unless he was using what, liquid luck?
No, Imperio. He's using Imperio, and everyone was writing Fleur Delacour on their slips.
Oh,
fire! So there's really only one option,
and he knew he didn't have to do that for they did that anyway with Victor Crumb.
They did that.
Makarov was
like,
no one's getting in but Victor.
Right. Everyone, write down, spell it for him. You know, VI. Here we go. But yeah, no. Sorry. Go on though with your theory because I think it's great. Like it's. Like everyone sort of gets on Fleur and they think even when I did my most powerful, how powerful is Fleur Delacour? Everyone's like, oh my God, she was either too strong or she was too weak. And I actually think she's very powerful, very strong. Right. Go ahead.
So I wrote down in here, is Fleur actually the GOAT? Is she actually the most skillful of them all? Because why would, I mean, let's think, Moody keeps sabotaging her the most. Let's think, why would she fail at everything so hard and not even be close to getting her task? I mean, did she? She retrieved the egg, okay. But she had a lot of trouble with the dragon.
Yeah.
Is there actually no better Beauxbatons student? I think she really was the best of them all. I think Beauxbatons is a high-class academy.
Yep.
And
prestigious, yep.
Prestigious, right? and they have really good education. So maybe she really is the strongest of them all. That's mm-hmm. why Crudy has to send some Grindylows, has to send or mess with her in the maze. I don't know what he could have done with the dragon, but well, maybe she should make sure. Go ahead.
I think you're onto something, because I think the HBO show, again, has a chance to kind of go in there and throw an extra little scene in where fake Moody, where Crudy actually does do something with the Grindylows or pays off a merperson, something. Right. And there's all these extra things that go on in this tournament to really set this up, because he's got to give Harry every advantage he can, even though Harry almost gets like, I mean, look at this. He almost totally fails at this task. But yeah. Like his whole mission is to really get Harry to that cup first so he can go to the graveyard. So like, you got to imagine he's sweating watching him in the library going like, okay, Dobby, go give him the gillyweed. This is getting out of hand. Right. Because imagine if he doesn't, if he fails utterly at this task, or he does show up with scuba diving equipment. Right. Like, Crudy's going to go insane. He's going to go absolutely insane.
But he can't be too obvious helping him.
So. No. Right, exactly. So it's sort of like in the spirit of helping Hogwarts win, he's taking out Fleur. Right. He's you know, kind of putting Imperio, or he's bewitching Crumb. He's doing different things. So I feel like he's doing more, and maybe the HBO show will show us what he was doing, because it's kind of a long shot. That's why other channels have theories on what was the backup plan if he doesn't get to the cup, because Voldemort could still use one of them to take their blood, the blood of an enemy of whatever. I'd have to be super literal. I mean, it could have been anyone would oppose him and opposes evil. So Cedric could have been that sacrifice. Fleur, Victor Crumb was very anti-dark arts. They all kind of work. So what's the backup plan if you don't get Harry there? Anyway, I say that to say, like, I think you're right that there was actually probably more manipulation of stuff than we realize, and that might come out in the HBO show. It'd be very cool to see that, because I think Fleur definitely is way more powerful than what we see. And I'm thinking of J.K. Rowling. I'd love to see her just whipping these boys all right. over the place. You know what I mean? It'd be really comical and very funny. And I think, and I think again, with magic and power, why not? She's got the Vila Charm situation going on. So I still want Cedric to be a boss. He is a humble.
Oh, he is too. For definitely. Hogwarts.
He's definitely really good. And there's even questions about Victor Crumb and his transfiguration here. Like, why was he a half shark human? Did he mess up a little bit? Or did he intend to do that? Because thank God he did have hands to take the jagged stone and cut the rope. Right. Otherwise, he'd be gnawing on that stupid thing with his fins going like this, trying to, like, you know, figure out.
Hermione and have accidentally.
Well, Harry was worried about that. He says, can take a chunk of her leg off. So, like, come on, Victor. Like, he was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, I think it's a really good point. I like your idea there with Fleur, because she is, I mean, my Fleur is also the goat. So yeah, I think so. Thanks. Now, what do we think about this whole moral fiber situation? Like, is that fair? How subjective are these things? I mean, is it you got back in time or you didn't? Was there a scale? Like, every 5 minutes you're late, 5 points comes off out of 50?
That's where the teachers in us come out, because if you set up a task for students, you have to have, like, you have to give them a frame, like, if you achieve this, you will get this result, right? You will get this grade most of the time, but they get marks. And then you can't just pull out of your head, like, of your wizard head, like, oh yeah, by the way, hat, sorry, not head, hat, your wizard hat. Oh, by the way, if you decide to rescue more than one person, you get extra points. I would go like, well, had I known that, I would have rescued more people.
Oh, I know. I've actually been in this situation before many times where I decided to improv a little game, a little reading game with my students who are working on reading. And clear enough, one student like does something that's extraordinary. I'm like, oh, okay. And she's like, I deserve 2 points. And I'm like, yeah, you do. And I'm like, this is not really an official game. We're just kind of doing this for fun on the fly. And one kid's like, I'm done with this. You're just making up rules, blah, blah. It was like the second or third time, I guess. And he wasn't even participating. And I was sort of like, what's going on over here? And it's just like, you just make up the rules around here. I'm like, yeah. But he got really upset. And I was like, okay, yeah, you're probably right. I guess I just made that up. But yeah, no, when you're doing a paper, a project, a presentation, it's got to be clear cut. What are the parameters here for this?
So. Right. If I say like, okay, you got to write 5 paragraphs to get an A, and you write like 10, and I can't say, okay, you get 2 extra points for writing 5 more. Can't do that, because then the other student comes to me and says, well, I didn't know that I could get extra points by writing more paragraphs. You didn't make that clear. So it's just so, yeah, it's really Dumbledore-esque to say, oh, guess what? Let's just give him extra points.
Right, right.
And of course, yeah. Ludo Bagman's like, heck yeah. I got all my money
on Harry.
I got all my money on this guy. Right. So yeah. And then I don't know. I mean, oh, and then why did Madame Maxime do it? Because of Fleur. Because obviously she rescued one of her students. Yeah, or I guess like maybe her sister is not a student yet, but potential future student.
For sure.
So obviously she says yes to it too. So Karkaroff's the only one who's like, that doesn't make sense, guys. And I know this, it feels like, okay, he doesn't like Harry. He doesn't like anything that has to do with sabotage and Crumb.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a point. I mean, a little bit.
He has a point. Doesn't Harry finish second in this overall in terms of points? I think he gets 40. Or no, what?
Yeah, 45?
Crumb got 40. Crumb only got 40, and he gets back second.
Right. And that's because,
I don't think so. That's not fair, you guys.
Right. It's because his magic is incomplete. But like you said, maybe that was on purpose. Maybe.
But also, who said you had to do a complete transfiguration or a complete.
Exactly. That was
bubble
also
head
not clear.
Perfect charm.
It was also. Yeah, it only said retrieve bogus. Your. Yeah. Retrieve your person. Come back within the time limit.
Yeah. And Crumb is second. So if I'm Karkaroff, I'm going like, this is rigged, dude. This is totally rigged. Right. I mean, like literally, I think, you know, again, you know, my wife being German is sort of like, no, Germans would say like, this is a matter of he came second. All right? Right. Cedric came out first. He's in first place. Second place, Crumb. Third place, right. Harry. Don't care how you disperse the points. Give Harry 39 points and give Crumb 40 for crying out loud. That's fine. Even if there's 1 point differential, whatever. That was wild though. If I were Karkaroff, I'd be a little ticked.
Yeah.
So anyway, it is what it is. But okay. Well, essentially, Harry's what a relief that Harry won't even learn about the next task until later. He doesn't have to stress out clear until what is it, June 24th?
Yeah, and the month
next,
before
third and final.
Right, and they learn about what they're gonna face a month before, so he doesn't have to stress out about it now. He can say, well, I don't know what's gonna happen, so he can do the same mistake all over again.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Until the last minute.
Thankfully, the maze is pretty straightforward, and there's just go in, use your magical abilities, get through the maze.
You can't really prepare. It's like one of those things where either, you know, you just do regular spells that might help you. But I think that's just Harry out even more. Not knowing.
Right. Well, yeah. Right. Although in this situation, he did know what he needed, and he really could not figure it out at all. So.
Right.
There it is. All right. Well, hey, friends. Yeah, that's our discussion there. Some cool things going on. This is really exciting. We're into the summer, by the way. And so we are going to be hammering out some recordings. We're pumped for that. We've got Harry Potter news probably coming monthly. We're going to be getting some updates. I feel like as that comes out, we're working on converting our chapter summaries over to video versions over on YouTube. So We'll have those dropping. We got some cool long form theories. Actually, I was in the car listening to our previous episode where we talk about Mad-Eye Moody's crazy eye. And I've got that theory up here. I've got to finish that up and get that animated and published for you guys. Also, over on the Flannel Wizard, I want to make a quick little announcement here. We'll put a link for it in this podcast if you guys want to. I have started posting over there again. Never told anybody, actually. And I'm really just doing like taking my videos, dropping them, and I'm, you know, kind of doing some commentary. So I've started some First Age stuff over there, some Lord of the Rings things. I'm going to be doing a series this summer on that. So come check out that. Still talking Star Wars, still talking some Harry Potter stuff over there, all of it. So be sure to go check that out. It's a project I'm happy that I'm working on, and got over 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I am super stoked about
Congrats,
that.
Congrats, Lottie, by the way, Flannel Wizard.
Hey, thank you so much. Lottie is also, by the way, she is knocking out some of her crochet projects. She's got some commissions she's working on, working on some vids and some reels over there. So we are excited for the summer and excited to bring you guys more recordings. So be looking forward to that. You're going to see an uptick in those as we go through here. Not going to put ourselves down to a schedule or a calendar quite yet, just because of the unexpectedness of being, you know, newborn parents. Sounds like I'm saying we're newborn and we're parents. You know, it's weird. We're born again. kind of. We're parents of a newborn. But anyway, it's wild. It's crazy. We're a little sleep deprived, and it's something. So
I don't know how long we can call him a newborn, though.
I don't know.
He's getting close to 3 months, so.
What do you call him? A baby, okay? He's a baby. He's just a baby, okay? He's a stud. He cracks us up. He's actually
so funny.
Hilarious. He just sits there and cracks us up. So
best type of entertainment you can get.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, hey, friends, thank you guys so much. Thanks for tuning in to Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope that you're going to join us in the future. We thoroughly do enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons. If you don't want to miss out on that next episode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us that review, follow on social media at Fleur and Bill and at the Flannel Wizard, please.
Yeah, follow him. If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium. You will find all the links down below. Thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you, to Luna and back. On our next reread episode, we will discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 27, Padfoot Returns. So make sure you tune back in next time. And until then, have a great rest of your week. Thanks for joining us in our shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.